Okay, so this is our weekly iyun in the Nach that we're doing for the week. This week, we go up to chapter 13, yeah, it's on. This week, we go up to chapter 13 in Sefer Yehoshua. We're not up to there yet. We'll be up to there by tomorrow, Erev Shabbat. But one of the topics, one of the subjects that comes up along the way in these parakim that we started on Sunday, right smack in the middle of them in the 10th parak, is the war of Yehoshua when the kings gang up against him right after he makes he ends up establishing a treaty with the people of Gibeon. So the kings of the south are not very happy about this, and they all gather together and first of all lay siege to Gibeon. The Gibeonim are traitors. Rather than show solidarity with their brethren, the Kena'anim, they have decided to go to the other side and join with the Jewish people and make a peace treaty with them. So that's a very unpopular move. And so they decide to attack them. So this group of five kings all attack Gibeon, which is one city. Even if it's a very significant city with a large army, to fight against five armies of five kings is not going to be easy. They summon Yehoshua. Yehoshua comes and ends up defeating all five of the kings. But something really remarkable happens in the course of this war that doesn't happen in any other war. And that's in on the sheet, if you look, it says on the side, Ha'amadat Hashemesh, which means the standing of the sun, on the side here where this paragraph begins, Az Yedaber Yehoshua Lashem. Now, I just want you to notice something really interesting. Actually, you know what? I don't want to ruin it for you, so I'm not going to foreshadow too much. But just pay close attention to the way that the Navi expresses what happens. Not just what's described as happening, but the language that's used. Okay? Pay attention to that. That's all I'll say. We're going to come back to it. So, Az Yedaber Yehoshua Lashem. Then Yehoshua said to Hashem, Biyom Tet Hashem Et Ha'emori Lefnei Bnei Israel, on the day that Hashem put the Emori before Bnei Israel, meaning to say on the day that the Jewish people defeated the Emori, Vayomer le'enei Israel, and he said before the eyes of Israel, meaning Yehoshua is speaking to Hashem before everybody, Shemesh beGibeon Dom. May the sun stop in Gibeon. Dom means, it can also mean to be silent, okay? But here it has the sense of stop. V'yareach be'emek Ayalon. And the moon in the valley of Ayalon. So that's a six-word rhyme, okay? Shemesh beGibeon Dom, v'yareach be'emek Ayalon. Okay, it's a kind of a, it has a beat to it. Okay, it has a rhythm to it, the way that he said it. Vayidom Hashemesh v'yareach amad. And the sun, vayidom, it's a very strange word for stopping, because usually vayidom means vayidom Aharon. When Nadav and Avihu die, it says vayidom Aharon. Aharon was quiet. He was silent. He didn't say anything, right? When Nadav and Avihu die, and Moshe Rabbeinu says, this is what Hashem said, Bikrovaya Kadesh, etc., vayidom Aharon. Aharon didn't say anything. So literally, vayidom Hashemesh v'yareach amad. The sun was silent or stopped. V'yareach amad. And the moon stood. Ad yikom goy oyevav. Until the nation defeated its enemies. What nation are we talking about here?
Israel.
The Jewish people. So what kind of language is this? Ad yikom goy oyevav. What was it talking about? Why doesn't it say until the Jewish people defeated the Emori? What is ad yikom goy oyevav? Until a nation defeated its enemies. Literally, that's what it means. It's a very strange way to speak. Halo hi chituva al sefer hayashar. Behold, it is written in the book of Yashar. What's the book of Yashar?
The Torah.
Well, the Midrash says it's the Torah, but literally, in a literal sense, it doesn't say. But many times in Sefer Yehoshua it says, Kakatu b'torat Moshe, Eved Hashem. Why doesn't it say, like it's written in the book of Hashem, of Moshe, Eved Hashem? Instead it says, like it's written in the Sefer HaYashar, whatever that is. Now there are many books called Sefer HaYashar in history, but they were all based on this phraseology here. Like there's Sefer HaYashar written by Rabbeinu Tam, and things like that. You know, people wrote books called Sefer HaYashar because of that. But it's a mystery book. We don't know what it is. Okay, like it says in the Torah, Sefer Milchamot Hashem. We don't know what Sefer Milchamot Hashem is. So Sefer Yeshar, we don't exactly know what it means. Vayamod Hashemesh b'chatzi Hashemayim, and the sun stood in the middle of the heavens. Veloatz lavo ki yom tamim, and it didn't rush to come. Okay, meaning it didn't rush to set. Atz means to rush. Okay, like atzim means to be pushing, to be pressuring. Okay. So it didn't rush to come. Ki yom tamim, like a full day, like a complete day.
But it says vayamod Hashemesh, but vayamod. It says
vayidom.
Vayidom Hashem.
Right. So isn't it? It's a little bit strange because actually it sounds like it says the same thing twice. First it says vayidom Hashemesh v'yareach amad ad yikom goy oyvav, whatever that means, until a nation defeated its enemies, as is written in the book of Yeshar, which we have no idea why he's talking about the book of Yeshar. Why are we talking about that now? This book is good enough. Why do I need another book to tell me? You're telling me the story now. Why are you telling me about another story? And then it says, "Vayamod Hashemesh b'chatzi Hashamayim," that the sun stood in the middle of the sky and it didn't rush. Veloatz lavo kiyom tamim. It didn't rush to go to set for a full day. Kiyom tamim. And then it says, "Velo haya kayom ha'hu lefanav ve'acharav lishmoa Hashem bekol ish." There was no time like this before or after where Hashem listened to the voice of a person. Ki Hashem nilcham li Yisrael, because Hashem was doing war for Israel. So it's interesting because, first of all, that pasuk also is a little bit unusual. There was never another time that Hashem listened to somebody ask him something. It happens all the time. It's happened many times before. And it will happen many times after. What do you mean that this was the only time Hashem listened to someone? And because Hashem is fighting for Israel, what does that have to do with keeping the sun standing still? If it said that they slaughtered their enemies, you know, with their bare hands or something like that, okay. Ki Hashem nilcham liYisrael. If it said that the sun melted their enemies, okay. But what does it say happened? The sun stood still because Hashem is fighting for Israel. What kind of fighting is keeping the sun standing still? We have to understand a couple of things. There are two basic problems with this text, okay? And I want to tell you that I'm a person that I'm going to read to you, and I gave to you a commentary that takes the most extreme position on interpreting this text possible. And the reason I did that was just to illustrate to you the range of interpretations. But there are two problems with it. The first one is in terms of the content. And what I mean by that is, what is the necessity of stopping the sun in the middle of the war? Why is Yehoshua asking Hashem to stop the sun in the middle of the war? Why is that significant? And why does he mention the moon? Because clearly, if the sun is up, we don't have to care about the moon. why is he mentioning that? Okay, number one. Number two is the style of how it's expressed. It's a very bizarre style. Then Yehoshua said to Hashem, "As yedaber Yehoshua Hashem," you know, then Yehoshua declared to Hashem, "May the sun stand, you know, be silent." Okay, may the sun be silent, literally, is what he says.
Is that a phraseology that you use? It's
unusual. Like it sounds like Az Yashir Moshe or something like that. It's an interesting language, right? It's not a common language. That's true. And he says, and the whole phraseology of Shemesh B'Giv'on Dom, it doesn't sound like a normal way of speaking. He doesn't say, "May the sun stop, please." He says, "The sun shall be silent in Giv'on, and the moon in the valley of Ayalon." I mean, like, why is he speaking in such an unusual, stilted manner? Right? It's not a normal way to ask for something. If he needs something, he says, "Hashem, I need you to stop the sun," and Hashem says, "Okay," or "No." It's a very unusual. So the whole phraseology of it is strange. The necessity of this miracle is not clear. What kind of miracle is this? Why do we need this? And one would think, such an enormous miracle, okay? We talked about crossing the Yarden. Much ink was spilled in describing the crossing of the Yarden. You know, much ink is spilled in the crossing of Yam Suf as well. Whenever we're talking about massive miracles, now it's hard to imagine a more remarkable miracle than the sun stopping for a full day. I mean, that's extremely unusual and would affect everybody in the world. Okay? And yet, in these very cryptic pesukim that don't even really come out and say that clearly what happened or why it was necessary, and never mention it again, It's not like it's mentioned, well, we should put a, something here to remember that Hashem made the sun stand still. There doesn't seem to be any like response or any indication from the Pesukim of how remarkable this is. Compared to other miracles that have happened, then it's gone on and on describing exactly how they happened and what happened, and we expect to see the Aaron and the Kohanim coming and doing something like they do with all the other miracles that Yehoshua oversees during his career, right?
They
sang a song, you expect something, a description of how people saw all over the world that God held the sun and the people. It says that everybody in the world was amazed that Hashem split the Yarden and allowed the Jews to come in. People didn't notice that they didn't have a night one day. It was just day for, you know, a full 24 hours or 36 hours, and nobody mentioned that. Nobody was awestruck by that. It's very strange. Okay? It doesn't seem to absorb the full impact of what it's saying. Okay? It's very strange. So, the Ralbag, and I want to tell you, I was in the beginning when I first saw the Ralbag. Now, there are different interpretations. There's the standard interpretation. What Rashi says, what most of the Chachamim, most of the Chazal say, is they take the miracle at face value, or so it would seem. They say that, you know, the sun stood still. Yehoshua prayed to God that the sun should stay, you know, stand still. Apparently, seemingly the reason would be so that he could complete the battle in one day, you know, under daylight, because the part of the advantage that he had here was that five kings of heavily fortified territories that otherwise he would have to go one by one, knocking on doors, knocking down doors in order to capture, were all out on the battlefield because they all came to attack Gibeon. And we know that when they run away, Yehoshua says, make sure not to let them get back into their cities. Make sure to capture them before they get back into their cities. So he was aware of the problem that they would escape back to their cities and then the campaign would be 10 times more difficult. So this was an opportunity for him to finish them off in one battle rather than having to spread it out over a lot of time and a lot more manpower and a lot more effort and a lot more strategy and so on and so forth. So we can understand the benefit. So many of the rabbis take it at face value. The Radak and Rav Chastai Kreskas and some of the more philosophically oriented Rishonim, the Radak in particular, will say that it doesn't mean that the sun stood still for a full 36 hours. It says ki yom tamim, like the longest day that you ever have. In other words, it wasn't that the sun stood still for 36 hours. It was that instead of it being an ordinary, let's say, winter or fall day, it was like a summer's day. So it was extra hours were added on to the day, according to the Radak and some other Mefarshim. And I believe the Rambam says the same in Moreh Nebuchim. That it means, ki yom tamim, that it stayed like a full day, meaning it was the fullest possible day that one could have. Not that it was 36 hours. So they try to attenuate the miracle a little bit to mitigate the, wow, this is really unusual factor of the miracle. Right? Because 36 hours of no sunset would be a miracle that would be, you know, outdo every other miracle that ever happened in the history of the entire Torah. And yet it's not recorded that way. It never is mentioned again. That remember Hashem who held the sun for you for 36 hours. So the Radak takes that approach. The Abarbanel very, very aggressively and strenuously defends the traditional interpretation and says that all these people are, you know, don't want to reckon with the real truth and that, you know, it happened the way that it says and so on. And he doesn't like those who try to take a less literal and traditional take on the interpretation. So you have the Abarbanel in one extreme, really defending and dismissing anybody who tries to take this out of its most literal, simple sense. You have the Radak, who tries to occupy what I would call the middle position, where he says, listen, the miracle was that the sun stood still, but not for 36 hours, only for maybe a few hours longer than it normally would. And then you have the Ralbag. The Ralbag brings to us what I would say is the most radical position of all. And when I first read the Ralbag, like I think most people would think, when they read it, the impression that you initially get is that the Ralbag is engaged in what we call special pleading. In other words, he doesn't like this miracle, and therefore he's trying, the lady doth protest too much. He He's trying to get rid of this miracle because it doesn't sit well with him philosophically. Okay? That's how it strikes one at first. And for all my life, I myself was one of those people who was very skeptical and felt that the Ralbag's interpretation was forced and that he was trying to satisfy a philosophical agenda and by, you know, reinterpreting the Pesukim to be less offensive to, let's say, modern science, his modern science, you know, to an understanding that is more naturalistic. But I think when we take a look at the Ralbag and we actually take a look back at the Pesukim, what happened to me was a year or two ago when I was learning Sefer Yoshua, I had an epiphany and I changed my mind. Now, I might not be able to convince you to change your mind, but I've given you enough foreshadowing into what the problems with the text are. Honestly, those problems occurred to me after the fact, not ahead of time, when I was actually discussing with another group this chapter, and we were discussing a different Mefarshim. And it was fascinating that they saw the Ralbag's interpretation as being the best fit for the Pesukim. Now, we may see that, but let's first take a look at what he actually says. Yes?
Can we ever say, I don't know in this particular case, but that some Pesukim were inserted into Tanakh from other
from another Navi.
From another Navi, we don't say.
From another Navi, we could.
Or other books of the time, like a book called Sefer Yashar that might have been.
Well, it could be quoted in the Navi. That's certainly possible. Like it says, "Sefer Melchamot Hashem," etc., etc.
Right.
You know, it's quoted. That would be okay. But not that some random person just put it in there because they felt that it was a good addition. I don't think that would be a reasonable supposition. Now let's take a look at what the Ralbag says, and then we're going to see there is one other place, by the way, where Sefer HaYashar is mentioned. Does anybody know before I tell you? Who's a Baki in Tanakh and knows right off the top of their head where it is? The beginning of Shmuel Bet. When Shaul dies, and I put it as the last sheet here, when Shaul dies and David comes, Vayikonen David et hakinah hazot, that David comes to, this is the back of the last sheet, that when David comes to eulogize Shaul, he says, Vayomer lelamed b'nei Yehuda kashet, to teach the children of Yehuda to use a bow, hinei chituval sefer hayashar. Behold, it's written on the Sefer HaYashar. That's the only other place in the Tanakh you find that. There is another place where you find a reference to an outside source, which is when David says, like it says in the Mishala Kadmoni, like it says in the old saying, right? So they quote, you know, literature of their time, you could say. What exactly Sefer HaYashar is, we don't know. But we notice something very interesting. David HaMelech also quotes Sefer HaYashar. Or seemingly so. He says, "Lelamed b'nei Yehuda kashet," that now that Shaul and Yehonatan have died, meaning once the great warriors have died, now we have to teach everybody how to fight because they're not going to be able to rely on these great warriors anymore. That's what he means. "Lelamed b'nei Yehuda kashet." Haloich kituval sefer hayashar. Behold, it's written on sefer hayashar. But what is David HaMelech doing over there? What kind of statement is he making? Is he describing the police report of the deaths of Shaul and Yehonatan?
About the tactic in war.
Well, it's more than that. He's involved in poetic. He's giving a poetic address, right? He's giving a eulogy in poetry. It's a kina, right? It's an elegy. We actually call it, right? It's like the keynote of Tisha B'Av. He's saying poetry. Hatzvi Yisrael al bamotecha chalal ech nafadu giborim. It's poetry that he's doing. So he's saying, "Behold, it's written on Sefer HaYashar." Lelamid b'nei Yehuda kashet. It says, we will have to teach. In other words, what he's saying is, apparently Sefer HaYashar is some kind of a book that has in it all kinds of pithy sayings and all kinds of poetic expressions and all kinds of different ideas that are, you know, that are phrased in a poetic form. So he's quoting it. Lelamid b'nei Yehuda kashet. Now we'll have to teach B'nai Yehuda the bow. In other words, that was something people would say when someone died who was a great warrior. Okay, that was a phrase people would say. It was quoted like the good book says. That's what Tevye would say. But of course he was talking about the Torah. But the point is, they would quote Sefer HaYashar when it was when it was an appropriate time. So he would say, this is like it says in the book of Sefer HaYashar. It's time to teach B'nai Yehuda how to use a bow. Meaning that was something that you would say when someone who was mighty died. Like when we say today, you know, if somebody who's a great Talmid Chacham dies, you know, we feel that now we have to work even harder to make sure that the people are educated because we, you know, we don't have the ability to teach and learn on that level. We're relying on these great people and we don't have them anymore. Okay? We have to go back to the drawing board now and teach people all over again. So you see that there is a quotation factor here, right? From Sefer HaYashar. That's very interesting to note. And they're both phrased. We noted that when Yehoshua calls upon the sun to stop, he uses a very poetic language. Also the same kind of meter as David. Right? Ech nafalu giborim. How can the mighty ones have fallen? Lilamid b'nei Yehuda kashet. Three word phrases. Little phrases. Now look. Shemesh begivon dom. V'yareach be'emek ayalon. Right? It's also in a poetic phraseology. And what does he do? He says, like it says in Sefer HaYashar. That couldn't be, it could be just a interesting coincidence, but Vayidom HaShemesh V'yareach Amad Ad Yikom Goy Oyevav. These little phrases, Vayidom HaShemesh V'yareach Amad Ad Yikom Goy Oyevav Haloi Kituval Sefer HaYashar, right? The same kind of concept. It's like the old saying goes, the sun stood still and the moon didn't move from the valley of Ayalon, like it's until the nation defeated its enemies. What nation? We don't know because he's quoting from some other book. You understand? In other words, that's the whole problem that we had when we read the text, right? That why is he talking about another nation until the nation or a nation defeats its enemies? Why is that the right thing to say now? How about the sun stood still until the Jewish people defeated their enemies? What's Goy Oyevav? He doesn't know what the name of the nation is. He's having a senior moment. Yeah, he forgot. So what does it mean? It's he's quoting something. Vayidom HaShemesh V'yareach Amad Ad Yikom Goy Oyevav Halo Iktuval Sefer HaYashar. It's like the straight book says. The sun stood still and the moon stood still until the nation defeated its enemies. So he was using, in other words, what today when somebody would use, like I actually just did it before, the lady doth protest too much. Everybody knows that's from Macbeth, right? So, but you have many, you remember that, of course, because you went, everybody here had good high school education. That's high school, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, but you could quote many things that we have in our everyday, you know, repertoire of sayings and phrases that they come from literature, from our communities, from our culture that we've picked up. And so that seems to be, okay, exactly what Yehoshua is doing, which makes sense why his phrasing is so generic. And then it also seems to be what David HaMelech is doing. Okay? Now let's take a look at what the Ralbag says. And what really fascinated me was, again, that when you read the Ralbag, if I had not given you all this background material and I just dropped you into the Ralbag, you would have been predisposed to not agree with him. Because you would have been predisposed to say, he's just trying to force this into some kind of a philosophical model that doesn't really work. But now when we look at it, maybe we'll have a more open mind, okay? Let's take a look. Turn to the back of the page. Now, I apologize. These underlinings and numbers and everything, they're my own notes from my own Ralbag that you must that may or may not be relevant to this actual shiur. I don't remember what I have underlined here. Okay, so he says, this is in the paragraph where I have underlining, Yesh bezota parasha sefekot rabot. There are a lot of doubts about this parasha. He doesn't mean he's having crisis of emunah. What he means is there's a lot of problems. Okay? Ra'oi la'ayen b'hem. We have to explain them. Ha'echad hu, she'im haya she'ashemesh amad u'batel me'atnu'a nir'et lanu, hine haya zeh ha'mofet yoter nifla la'en shi'ur mikol ha'mofetim she'nasu al yad Moshe. If the sun actually stood still and stopped moving, that would be greater than any miracle that Moshe Rabbeinu ever did. Okay? To stop the sun from moving. Now we happen to know that the sun doesn't actually move, but it doesn't matter. And then, and if you look at the bottom,
when was the Ralbag? Is it Rishon?
Yeah, the Ralbag is a Rishon. The Ralbag lived in the, I want to say, the 14th century. Okay, the 1300s. Now, the Ralbag was very much a student of the Rambam in spirit. He was a very much younger contemporary of the Ramban. So the Ramban was a younger contemporary of Rambam, and the Ralbag, so he was like another generation after or so. The Ralbag is what would be considered by people who like to use labels, of which I'm not numbered, a hyper-rationalist. Okay? He's a very much a rationalist, like to the point that he'll take certain ideas of where certain points where the Rambam said, you know what, we can't go any further than this. We have to accept tradition, and you know there's a limit. The Ralbag would say, forget about that. No, we have to go. We have to follow the line of inquiry to its, you know, logical conclusion, and you know, tradition or not, we'll work the tradition around it. So the Ralbag was maybe in certain ways more extreme, you could say. He's thought of as more extreme of a rationalist than the Rambam. In principle, essentially, he's the same school of thought of as the Rambam. Just in certain areas, talking about Hashem and providence and how Hashem knows things and how Hashem interacts with his creations and such metaphysical questions as are beyond, you know, the scope of our discussion, the Ralbag and the Rambam part ways on some very significant questions and some very significant issues, to the point that the Rambam would probably consider the Ralbag out of bounds. Yeah, so, no, he wasn't alive to say that, but most likely he would view him that way. The Ralbag wrote a book called Milchamot Hashem, which is available, it's not in print, and it's ironically only available right now. I'm sure they're going to eventually print it again, because the Ralbag's books are now being all reprinted by the same people who are really into the Rambam. They're also really into the Ralbag, because the Ralbag basically provides a Maimonidean commentary on the Torah and a Maimonidean commentary on the Tanakh, except in those areas that he deviates from the Rambam. But his basic methodology is very Maimonidean, so people like that. They're into that right now. So the same schools of thought that are producing, like from Malei Adumim, that are producing all this Rambam material, they're also producing Ralbag material. And I wouldn't be surprised if Milchamot Hashem comes out in a new edition at some time soon. Right now it's only available in old, out-of-print editions. And so the best edition is actually the English, because a professor translated the whole thing. He got his hand on a couple of manuscripts of it, and he translated the whole thing, and he has excellent introductions and synopses of it, and it's a very well-done work.
Has fire on it?
Huh? I have a copy of one of... I have the one where he talks about this part. I have this set. It's called The Wars of the Lord in English. And you can get it at the YU book sale. They always sell the volumes. I think the whole thing is out now. It's very fascinating. The beauty of it is that in areas where, let's say, the Rambam is very terse in Moreh HaNevuchim, where he talks about divine providence, and he writes volumes worth of material in one chapter, the Ralbag will expand upon that into 10 chapters so that you really get the idea what the Rambam is trying to say. So in that way, he's very much an expositor of the Rambam. In other ways, he deviates from him. So there were some aspersions cast. For example, the Ralbag wrote a fantastically complex commentary in the book of Job, the book of Eov. But because it deals with divine providence, and he manages to work in some of his unconventional, unorthodox ideas into the commentary, some people say, well, you know, it's not the best commentary to use. Although it's in the Mikraot Gedolot. And so is his commentary on Mishle, and his commentary on the Nevi'im Rishonim is also in all of the Mikraot Gedolot. But he rarely brings up these philosophical ideas. They're in his Torah commentary. But, you know, you can kind of gloss over them, you know. They don't necessarily take away from your appreciation of his fundamental points. So he was a little bit controversial because of his philosophical ideas. But in essence, you know, he was a great Talmid Chacham, obviously a Baki in all of Halakha. Clearly from his commentary you can see that. And by and large, he's, you know, his commentaries and his insights are great. Most of the book Milchamot Hashem deals with philosophical issues of Aristotelianism that, you know, don't even directly have a bearing on the Torah. They're the sorts of things that scholars in those days were concerned with. He also invented like some astronomical instruments and stuff like that, which is pretty cool, the Ralbag did. And there's actually a star or a moon or something. It's named after him. Yeah. So he was somebody who contributed to general culture as well. And he's called Gersonides, like Maimonides in English. In any case, so he's known for having kind of super rational ideas. And so he starts taking issue with this whole idea of the sun standing still. And he says, first of all, this would be the greatest miracle that's ever occurred in the history of mankind, which would contradict what the Torah says, that lo kam navi od b'Yisrael kemoshe, l'chol ha'otot ha'mofetim. that Moshe Rabbeinu was greater than any other Navi in terms of the miracles that he performed. How could you say that and then say that Yehoshua did something which clearly stopping the heavenly bodies from their motion outweighs pretty much anything that Moshe Rabbeinu did during his lifetime, even the great things that he did do? So that's issue number one. And so then he goes on to, he talks about some apologetic approaches to that issue. Let's skip that and go to Mem Gimel, the next piece of the Ralbag here. He says, furthermore, and this is where he gets into the text a little bit. And here's where you feel a sense, if you haven't already sensitized yourself. Now, unfortunately, the Ralbag doesn't in the end say the kind of thing or make the kind of observations that I made in the beginning. I did that because I wanted to clear, you know, sort of prepare the way a little bit for an unconventional interpretation. He never goes for the direction that I was going for in reading of the text. So basically what happens here is the Ralbag comes to a certain interpretation of what happened here with Yehoshua based on his own philosophical reasoning and his own reading of the Pesukim. And I am suggesting to you that if we read the Pesukim from a literary standpoint, we read them, we actually will come to the same conclusion as the Ralbag. Okay? And it's very shocking and radical to say that, because his conclusion is very radical. But let's see. So he says, furthermore, the simple meaning of the Pesukim is that the sun didn't stop moving. Now, the way he's going to figure that out is different than how I would have suggested. So he says, and I'll tell you for a few reasons. First of all, it says, "Velo atzlavo kiyom tamim," that it didn't rush to set like it normally does. What does it mean it didn't rush? Not rushing means it's moving, just not rushing. So it obviously didn't stand still. Okay? That doesn't mean that it wasn't moving at all. Okay? And then he goes on to say that it only means from the perspective that they were looking that it wasn't moving. Because that's why it says, "Begiv'on." Be'emek ayalon. It's talking about that the sun should stop from the perspective of somebody standing in Givon. Right? So it's not saying the actual sun stopped. It's saying that from the perspective of somebody standing there, it looked as if it had stopped. Or had slowed down considerably, we might say. And then he says, furthermore, at the end, as we pointed out before, it says that Hashem does battle for Israel. Right? Then it says, this was the only time Hashem listened to somebody, which isn't true. There are many times. But then it says, because Hashem is fighting for the Jewish people. What does this have to do with fighting for the Jewish people, holding the sun in place? Maybe you should use the sun to, with a magnifying glass, you know, to burn them or something like that. Then we could see. But that's not what happens here. So then he says, then he starts to question his own theory. Okay, we can move to the next page, to Mem Dalet. Mem Dalet on the back. So at the bottom, he says something really interesting that I want to, because he has to deal with another problem, which is there's a story about Yeshayahu and Chizkiyahu where the sun goes back on the sundial. Okay, so that's something that you'll come up to later in Nachyomi, much later. He deals with it here too. But he says something very interesting. I put a star next to it for myself, actually, which is, I just copied this out of my copy. So he says, so I thought this was so interesting because it's something that that people get caught up on. He says, "V'im yirtze echad al kol panim, shiyu elu ha'mofetim b'shinui seder tenuat ha'shemesh." He says, listen, if somebody doesn't want to accept my explanation, and they want to say that actually the sun stood still, I don't have a problem. Lo nakpid alav b'zeh. I'm not going to be upset with them. Umi yiten v'chol to'el lo yiteh yoter mizeh ha'shiur. If only this was the biggest mistake that people were going to make in life, to think that. Right? That would be wonderful. That's what he says. Umi yiten. Ki ze magdil lefi machashavto otzem Hashem yitbarach v'yicholto. Because why does the person want to believe that the sun stood still? Because they feel that magnifies and glorifies God. Okay, so they make a mistake and they think God is so great. Why should I tell them otherwise? He's saying, I personally don't think that's what happened. But if somebody thinks that, and to them, that makes God more glorious in their eyes, if that were the worst mistake that anybody would make in understanding Hashem, that would be wonderful. Right? So it's an interesting attitude to have. Like some people who are sometimes very rationalistic about their Judaism, and they see somebody who has a different approach, a different view, and they can be very critical and very militant against them to try to banish them or try to disprove their view or try to alienate or marginalize their view. And the Ralbag is saying, listen, for the person who thinks that, you know, one person wants to see things in a more naturalistic way, and for them that's the way that they see God's glory, another one wants to think about it differently. Now, I might think that they're making a mistake, but the fact is that to that person, it's glorifying God to a greater extent. Why should I get in their face about it, you know? It's a very nice attitude.
What was his profession?
I don't know how he made money. That I'm not sure. But he definitely was involved in studying astronomy. I'm not sure if that was his actual profession or not. I don't remember what he actually did for a living. So he says at the bottom, he says, "Ve'achar shenit yeshev zeh," now that we've made this point, more or less, in his mind, "hinei nashuv leva'ir divrezot ha'parasha." Let's go back to the parasha. By parasha, he means to the text. "Va'omar," and I'll say this, "Shemamar Yehoshua Yashit." Now, I love the way he words it, because basically what he does is he's essentially saying, more or less, what I foreshadowed when I was explaining the psukim, but he says it in his own way. He says this. What Yehoshua was saying this was, "Sheterem Shiasur Hashemesh Miyot Al Givon," that before the sun is not over Givon, "Vayareach Miyot Al Emek Ayalon," and the moon from being over the valley of Ayalon, "Tishalem nikmat goy oyevav," that the revenge of the nation over its enemies should be completed. In other words, the way the Ralbag is reading it is essentially the same way that I was suggesting poetically to read it. He's saying to read it the opposite of what you would think. In other words, what he means is, he says that the sun shouldn't go down before the process is completed, which is, the Ralbag is taking it to mean, let it be so fast that the sun doesn't move before we're done. Okay? That's how the Ralbag is interpreting it. That we should get done so fast that the sun is standing still. Time is standing still while we're doing it. Okay? Now, if I read this before having really pondered how poetically thorny the psukim are, I would say, well, that's ridiculous. I mean, the psukim are saying that he said for the sun to stand still and that Hashem honored what he said. But honestly, the first time that I went, or for first few times that I studied this, that was my thought. I was saying, okay, he's trying to force this, you know, because he doesn't want to believe that the sun stood still. But then, when I was teaching it in a group of much more literary-minded people and we started really evaluating the different perushim, we started to realize, you know, the man has a point here. Because the psukim are deliberately not phrased in a prose form. They are phrased in a poetic form, suggesting that, in fact, what Yehoshua may very well have meant was something non-literal. Because he's not speaking literally. He says to God, a poetic phrase that he took from some book. That's the pshat of the psukim is that he's saying, "May the sun be silent in Givon, and the moon in the valley of Ayalon, like it says in the good old book Sefer Ayashar, until a nation defeats its enemies." Meaning, may time stand still until we're done. Please, God, don't let the sun go down until I'm done getting ready for Shabbat. I don't really mean that I think that the sun is going to stay still while I get ready for Shabbat. What I mean is, please let me get home fast enough that the sun is still up when I get there. That's what he's trying to say. That's what the Ralbag is interpreting here. Now, if you look, turn to the next page, "Aval katzara katuv bazeh." It's just that the Torah gives a short form of expressing this. Okay? And "V'yorel zeh ma she'amar acharav, v'yidom ha'shemesh v'yarech amad ad yikom goy oyevav." That the sun stood and the moon stood until a nation prevailed over its enemies. And the meaning is, "V'aratzon bazeh shekvar damam ha'shemesh begivon v'yarech be'emek ayalon ad shenishlema zot ha'nekama." That the sun was still in place when the revenge was completed. In other words, it was so quick. And now it makes sense what it means when it says that Hashem never listened to a person before, because Hashem is nilcham liYisrael, because Hashem is fighting for Israel. In other words, the war progressed so miraculously fast that it was as if the sun was standing still, because normally it would take 10 times as long, let's say, to complete that kind of military operation, and somehow they were dropping like flies. They defeated them so quickly. That's how the Ralbag is interpreting it. And he says that ki lo dai shi'ad shi'nakimu Yisrael me'akamim alehim. Okay, so he says, v'zeh haya inyan nifla. This was the amazing thing. It wasn't enough that the Jews were going to beat their enemies. Aval ya'adim zeh. But what happened was, hanekamat, that shezot hanekama, in other words, the prediction was, the promise was, that this revenge would happen bizman katzar kazeh, in such a short time.
That's still a big miracle.
Right, it's still a miracle. Right, and but that's the difference between the way to understand it. In other words, the Ralbag is understanding that the miracle was the progression of the war at such a fast pace. So that's why now we came to this. We started to have inklings of this kind of conclusion from reading the text, because it doesn't say, "And Hashem said to Yehoshua, I am going to hold the sun in the middle of the sky, and all the nations of the world will see that God is with you, and you're going to become great today, and the Jewish people are going to become great because God is with you, because they're going to see the sun stand still." Doesn't it say that in every other miracle that happens in the book of Yehoshua? It doesn't say that. Instead, it's as yedaber Yehoshua l'Hashem. Yehoshua holds forth to Hashem in a soliloquy, you know? He's speaking poetry talk. And what is he doing when he speaks poetry talk? He's not even being original. He's quoting something from Sefer HaYashar. Okay? May the sun be silent in Giv'on and the moon in the Emek Ayalon. Okay, so what, and therefore, so he was quoting that, he was referring to that, and then it says, "Vayidom Hashemesh vayareach amad, ad yikom goy oyevav." Okay, halo iktuval sefer yashar, right? What's the exact language? I mix up the words, I squish them. Oh, ad yikom, I got it right. Yeah, halo iktuval sefer yashar. So the until a nation prevailed over its enemies, that's the actual quote from Sefer Yashar, that Yehoshua was mitkaven to that quote. In other words, in his tefillah to Hashem, that the war should be so quick that time is standing still, he was referring to this thing in Sefer HaYashar about how this, it was as if the sun stood still that the nation defeated its enemies so quickly. Let me have that same good fortune, as they say in the old good book, Sefer HaYashar. Okay? And so therefore, that's how the Ralbag interprets it. Now, there's only one thing that holds us back from hopping right onto the Ralbag bandwagon, which is that it says, "Velo atz lavo ki yom tamim." It didn't hurry to go like a full day, meaning that the sun sounds like it was delayed. So the Ralbag deals with that. That is a minor problem to me, to my understanding, because everything else points to the Ralbag being right. Everything else points to this being a literary flourish of Yehoshua, and not being a literal miracle. Except this one part of the pasuk, this one fragment. So the Ralbag says that what it means is, Yom Tamim doesn't mean a full day. It doesn't mean a whole day. What it means is, when the day is complete. Meaning, that at noontime, the sun stops moving for a while. Right? The sun is high in the sky. And before it starts its descent in the sky, there's a delay of, let's say, an hour or so that the sun is directly overhead. And so what he meant was to say that while the sun was still in that position, they defeated all of their enemies. Meaning that it was at that high noon they were able to defeat, to what would have taken, let's say, days to accomplish normally, was accomplished in an hour or two.
Was it a purpose?
While the sun was still straight overhead. Yeah. The purpose was because if they had not accomplished this campaign in one day, in a very, very quick way, then what would have happened would have been that all these nations would have fled back to their fortified cities and been very, very difficult to capture for Yehoshua. No, it was a help to the Jewish people that they were able to clear out the entire south of Israel in one battle that took place in a couple of hours, basically, rather than over weeks or months. having to go knock on each door of each, you know, mini Yericho, basically. They would have to go to one after the other fortified city to try to engage them in battle and capture them. So we see why Yehoshua wanted it to happen this way. The difference between the interpretation of the other Mefarshim and what the Ralbag is saying is that the other Mefarshim are saying that the son, in other words, the purpose of the miracle is the same in both. That Yehoshua wanted to complete this process in one day, you know, in one fell swoop, without any delay, without any breaking up of the process, so that he could have them all. He had lured them all out of their hiding places. Now he had them where he wanted them. He didn't want them to go back.
Yeah,
that was the reason. No, because the son didn't save them. Hashem did. So they, you know, but that's the whole idea. So according to those who say the son actually stood still, or according to the Ralbag that just says that Hashem accelerated in a superhuman way the progress in the battle beyond anyone's wildest dreams, the point, the reason for it is the same. Because they didn't want everybody to go back to their original fortresses. But what the Ralbag is saying, the Ralbag may have come to it initially for philosophical reasons, because it seems like an enormous miracle. It doesn't seem like the Nach registers this as a major miracle in history. It never mentions it again. It doesn't have the usual opening to a miracle that we find in the Tanakh, that Hashem is saying that this is going to have a big impact. It seems, you know, a rather superfluous miracle, because it doesn't seem necessary to stop the motions of the heavenly bodies to accomplish this goal. The Ralbag has lots of reasons, okay, to prefer his pshat. But we can also, whenever you have a pshat like that, that's preferable for, let's say, philosophical reasons or conceptual reasons, and you also look at the text and realize that the text is constructed in a poetic way. The only other time Sefer HaYashar is quoted is in the poetry of David HaMelech. And the language is a stilted language that doesn't even seem to be referring to the battle at hand. It seems to be a quotation from an old book about some legendary kind of phenomenon. So the fact that Yehoshua is invoking it doesn't sound like Hashem is doing an open miracle. It sounds much more like what the Ralbag is saying, that Hashem empowered them or enabled them to defeat their enemies with a, so to speak, superhuman level of speed and efficiency. Yes?
Can you repeat what you said about where the Ralbag's thought was at flaw with the day not being the fullest?
Oh, so the only difficulty with his interpretation, where it seems like it doesn't exactly flow, because if it had just said this language of and the sun was still, v'yareach amad, ad yikom goy oyevav, haloich tuval Sefer HaYashar. If it was just this quote from Sefer HaYashar about the sun standing still, it sounds like a poetic flourish. It doesn't sound literal. But then it says, v'lo atz lavo ki yom tamim, that it didn't rush to come like a full day. Okay, now, what that's, now again, the language is still in a poetic kind of language. V'lo atz lavo, it didn't rush to set like a full day. I mean, it's still it still has the literary quality, not of a description. It could have said it more literally, you know, but it says, "Vayamod Hashemesh b'chatzi ha-shamayim, v'lo atzavo kiyom tamim," that it stood at the center of the sky, v'lo atzavo kiyom tamim, and it didn't rush to come down like a full day. So the Ralbag says, what does it mean it didn't rush to come down like a full day? It means that at noon. Okay, now we might say, well, that seems to disprove the Ralbag, because it sounds like it really stood in the sky.
This is the Ralbag's, right? It's your interpretation of Ralbag.
That's his interpretation. So it didn't rush. Yeah. So according to the... So we could read this and say this goes against the Ralbag, because it says, Vayamod Hashemesh b'chatzi ha-shamayim, that the sun stood in the middle of the sky. That sounds literal. And it didn't rush to come down like a complete day, meaning that it was taking a long time to come down. That's how we might read it. But the Ralbag is saying that no, kiyom tamim doesn't mean like a full day, meaning a 24-hour day. What it means to say is like at the point where the ascent of the sun is complete, meaning when the sun reaches its full height, okay, it doesn't seem to move in the sky for a while, right? If you observe the sun, which you shouldn't look directly at the sun, obviously everybody knows that, but if you observe the sun, you would know that at a certain, for about an hour or so during the day, maybe a little bit more, the sun is at a midpoint, you know, overhead, and it doesn't move. It doesn't seem to move. In other words, it hasn't started its descent from the sky yet. That's why you can't say mincha exactly at chatzot.
Arabi, the right? Sound is similar, like in the Haggadah, you know, we have darkness. Right. You know, when the Jews were taking out their bodies from the, you know, where the Haggadah Jews were got killed,
right.
And they don't want the mainstream to see them what
right.
They're doing.
But that darkness was actual, you know, physical, substantial darkness, right?
The dark day, God gave them the darkness also, they're not to, you know,
right.
They don't want to see.
Well, that's there we know that the miracles that are described in the Makot are, you know, are physical miracles that are happening. Here, the only pasuk that seems to sound like that is this one pasuk. And the Ralbag says that it means the sun was standing at its highest position, okay? Kiyom tamim, like at the point that it is, at the completion of the ascent of the sun, it was at that position when the battle was already finished. In other words, meaning to say that it was like time stood still. They got everything done in an hour. They got everything done without any delay in a supernaturally fast way.
What about darkness?
Okay, that's different because I don't want to mix it with the Makot of Mitzrayim. The Ralbag is saying here that the miracle wasn't that the sun stood still. The miracle was that the people went super fast. It's the reverse of the way that people understand it. That when it says that the sun was standing at the highest point in the sky and didn't rush to come down, that was from the perspective of the people, that the sun was still, it seemed like time was standing still because they were accomplishing so much, and yet they looked up and the sun was still exactly where it had been when they started. That was the miracle. That's what the Ralbag is saying. Now, I'm not saying you, as the Ralbag himself gives us an out and says, we don't have to accept this interpretation as being the absolute gospel truth, lahavdil. We don't have to accept it as being the only interpretation. But I brought it because I feel, you know, I was convinced by it because in the beginning I was very skeptical. I felt like it was a forced interpretation. But having looked at the sort of the literary qualities of the text and how it expresses it and how Yehoshua seems to be speaking poetically, even the words, Az Yedaber Yehoshua, you know, sound like he's speaking Shira. He's speaking a kind of a poetry. So the whole tone of the passage is a non-literal tone. And so taking that together with the Ralbag's issues with the taking of the miracle literally sort of leads us to a position, or at least it leads me, it persuaded me that the miracle might be as the Ralbag describes and it's being described in the Tanakh and being presented in the Tanakh in a dramatic and very sort of inspiring metaphoric way, but the practical reality on the ground was that it was the human beings who were moving really fast, not necessarily the sun that was moving very slow. And that's the Ralbag's interpretation, and I think it's a very convincing one to me.